Hello, and welcome to Conversations with Daniel, a funeral director. I'm Daniel. My hope is to draw the community in to support each other through conversations on death and life.
In this conversation, Pastor Adrian lets us know how the congregation at Lighthouse supports each other through relationships and looks to help each other in practical ways. He also shares how the death of his father has affected his level of empathy. Daniel and Adrian discuss how each person may have a different way and pace in which they grieve. They also deliberate on healthy ways of grieving and the importance of exercise during this process. Finally, Pastor Adrian asks Daniel to share how he became a funeral director. Adrian and his wife, Rose, have a heart for people and families. They reach out to hurting families in the community through grief support and divorce counseling. Adrian holds 2 master's degrees and a doctorate, and is also a world-class powerlifter. Adrian and Rose love the outdoors and spending time with their beautiful grandchildren.
Pastor Adrian, thank you so much for being here with me and having this conversation. I really appreciate it. Little icebreaker question for you.
Okay.
What is your favorite way to eat beef?
Eat beef?
Probably. You do eat beef?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I figured.
Probably barbecued on the grill. Yeah. Always. Yep. Medium rare.
Medium rare?
Yep.
What do you season it with?
Montreal steak spice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it charcoal grill or is it a propane?
It's a natural gas.
Natural gas. Yeah, yeah. All right. A little easier than charcoal.
Yes, but charcoal has a better flavor.
Yeah. I'm a fan of charcoal. I've got But if I had the natural gas hookup, I might.
Yeah.
Any particular cut of beef?
No. Hey, whatever reasonable price.
Yeah.
A bit of a cheapskate. But it's got to taste good. And if you do it, got to marinate it right. And then you're right. Okay.
If you cook, if you treat the steak properly, you can get a cheap cut and it'll still taste great.
You got that right.
Yeah. So tell me and tell us a little bit about your vision for the congregation here and maybe some things that you have going on right now.
Okay, appreciate that. At this point, first of all, just to give you a big background history, the church had a for sale sign on when I took over 4 years ago.
Mm.
And they were ready to close the church down. And they said, hey, could you help? And I said, well, I don't know. But we did, and God blessed. And we've been rebuilding. Awesome. So we started with about 10 or 15 people. Now we're running 2 services. We got podcasts. We got a YouTube channel. We put a new roof on the church. So we've just been rebuilding and engaging the community with the love and care of Christ to show people that we not only love them and care about them, but that we want to see God's life in a sense, and his message shown through their lives.
Awesome. That's great. Tell me about that. Like, how do you take a church that's got a for sale sign on it and turn it into something that's growing and thriving?
I think primarily the whole aspect is always building relationships. Everything in life is built on relationships. My relationship with God and my relationship with people around me. So as a pastor, I like to spend time with people. That means going to the coffee shops.
Mm-hmm.
Restaurants, food's always a good thing. So
it is a common theme.
Yeah, it is. So even we had a couple that had been in church and had knee surgery, and some wife said, "Why don't we come go over and visit them?" And I said, "What are you thinking?" I said, "Let's bring a lasagna over and some Caesar salad, and let's have fellowship."
Right.
And nobody ever turns us down when that happens. No. They're like, "Oh yeah, come on over."
That's awesome.
So we build again through relationships.
Fantastic. Thank you. That's really good wisdom. Now, a question for you. Does this congregation have any particular practices or traditions when it comes to funeral services?
Okay, specifically, no. Right now, I would say we're a conglomeration of many different people coming from many different faith backgrounds.
Okay.
They're now coming in through Lighthouse. But again, I'm going to say it's built on relationships. So even when we do funeral services or we meet with people, the idea is to sit down, to listen to the people's heart, and to develop a service that is uniquely that which represents the family and their wishes.
Mm.
But we always keep the message very clear.
Right. And you had mentioned earlier that food and that support that you have, is that something that the church would look to do as well, like to help support the family going through those difficult times?
Yeah, we actually had a family that really was not financially well off, and we said, let's step up, and we did, and we provided the food and fellowship and looked after it, and they even looked after some of the expenses involved in that. And,
oh, wow. That's beautiful.
And it was just, there was no cost at all. We just wanted to bless and encourage, because going through the grieving process of losing a loved one is tough enough as it is without being sometimes financially impoverished through the process.
That's so true. Yeah, because it is not a cheap process many times to go through. So to have that financial support would be huge.
Yeah.
Can you tell me of a personal experience that you've had with death that has affected your perspective in life?
Well, as a pastor, now this fall will be 41 years.
Oh, wow.
Being involved in pastoral ministry, I've got a plethora of experiences that I could share with you. I think primarily the one that affects you the most as a pastor or as an individual is when you have somebody that you love personally that goes through death. And for me, it was my father who was struggling with colon cancer and died in 1989. And I still remember getting that phone call from my father and telling me that he had colon cancer and that it had actually gone down into his, it had spread. And as a result of that, he only had a couple months left. And he had told me on a phone call, I was pastoring in Halifax at the time, and he shared with me at that point that he had already picked out his gravesite. And I just remember being stunned.
How old was he at that time?
He was he was 54. He just turned 55 when he died. So he was a young man.
No, unexpected.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And that changed my whole perspective, because when you walk with people through grief and through dying, you can try to be empathetic, you can try to be caring, but I got to tell you, until you walk through it yourself, it's a whole different story.
Yeah.
And I remember the people of the church I pastored feeling that I was more empathetic and more caring as a result of going through what I did with my own father through that process and learning what it meant to grieve. You know, my mother's favorite saying, when things got tough as a kid, suck it up, buttercup. So we didn't really grieve or cry about anything.
Right.
But all of a sudden, here we were faced with the death of my dad and for my mom, her husband. And we had to learn what it meant to grieve. That was tough, but it was also educational.
Learn to face the emotions, and to go through that.
Yep.
It's not easy.
No.
Yeah. So some cultures really are good at grieving, and they grieve loudly and out in front of everybody. Other cultures just shove that right down and try to be stoic.
And that would be the Dutch culture that I grew up with.
Yeah.
Very, very much so.
Yes, yes. Actually, one of my interviews, someone had asked if I cry much, and I'm Dutch-German background and a little bit of French-Canadian, but maybe that's why. I said, I don't know why, but it's hard.
Yeah, I agree, totally.
But then other times, I can't stop. I can't stop. It just comes out, even if I don't want it to, depending on the circumstance.
I find that often happens when you're watching a movie flick. Yes, I sometimes watch romantic flicks with my wife. And you see something sad happen, and all of a sudden, your emotions engage, and you're tearing up and you're going, what's going on? Really? Where is this coming from? But the thing is, you're so used to holding it in that all of a sudden, you're with your wife, you're watching this movie, all of a sudden these emotions come flooding to you that you just think to yourself, oh my goodness, where is this coming from?
I haven't suppressed mine down enough yet for that to happen, but it will.
Okay.
sometimes for me, it's if I'm really touched deep in my heart by something that maybe someone's done that I have so much gratitude for, and then that sometimes wells up the tears. But tears are healthy. I will say, even though sometimes I might have a hard time with them, tears are healthy, and
absolutely,
it's important. Yeah, that's good. So that affected your perspective, and it also gave you maybe more empathy when dealing with the grieving families in your church.
Absolutely.
That's great.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's hard to go through some things, but God can use those to touch other people, because then you have that the extra
sense of experience. Care and sympathy. Yeah.
Yeah. So a little bit different track. Is there, speaking of tracks, any song or maybe a smell or some experience that you come across that brings you back to a time when you experienced someone dying or a death in your life?
Well, as a pastor, having officiated many funerals, there's one song that always comes up all the time called I Can Only Imagine.
Oh, beautiful song.
And, and again, when you listen to the words of that song, you just think to yourself, oh my goodness, I can't think about this too deeply because the tears are going to come.
Yeah.
And I've watched the movie, the story behind that song, and that really resonates with me in that regard.
And that had to do with his dad too, right?
That's right.
Yeah, that's a really good movie, I Can Only Imagine, and an awesome song.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Very much so.
Yeah, thank you.
Another one that resonates with me, I remember a gal sharing her story. I was walked with her through, she had twin girls. They were involved in the Awana program at a church I pastored. And I remember the girl going to Six Children's in London.
Mm.
And she was very jaundiced and she actually died.
Mm.
And but she when she sang not saying, but when this woman shared her testimony at our church after it was all said and done, the song by Casting Crowns, I Will Praise You in the Storm, that song is such a, left an indelible memory upon me from hearing that song after what I saw that dear mom go through with her daughter.
Yeah.
That was just huge.
Absolutely. Now, you were telling me earlier that you run a grief program, or
it's called Grief Share Recovery. It's a 13-week program put up by Church Initiative, run it many times, and found to be very effective. It's again, the whole context is small group. A lot of times, sometimes different organizations will put on a seminar with, and you can get 200-300 people.
Right.
I find, in all honesty, that it has some effect, but I think the small group thing works a whole lot better because we always share with people, you don't have to share your story if you don't want to, but as you know, everyone inevitably shares their story, because when you process your grief in the context of a group of 7 to 8 to 10 people, there's things that are going to resonate with you, things you're going to like, oh, that's normal, oh, that's right. And the idea is helping people on their journey of grief through this process to guide them towards getting healing in their lives. And again, you know, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross wrote a book on death and dying, talked about the fivefold cycle that people go through in terms of grieving, and we find that the fivefold cycle is not one that they go through in increments. It's one they kind of bounce back and forth all over the place.
Yeah.
But again, trying to let people know that what you're going through is okay.
Mm-hmm.
This process, and sometimes the other thing too is that when people are grieving through the process of death and loss, each person does it at their own pace. Because sometimes, you know, I've heard this from people that I've worked with. Oh, aren't you over that yet?
Oh,
and I just want to wring that person's neck when they say that. Going like, because the grieving process just for different people takes longer.
Mm-hmm.
Some it's shorter, and some take years.
Yeah.
But you have to allow people the time and space to kind of process through those emotions and through those feelings. So the Grief Share program does that, and I've used it many, many years and continue to use it, and found it a real means of sometimes even through the process of helping people get healing in their lives, but also introducing to other people that are going through the process that can be very, very helpful, and also encouraging them how to process grief in their lives, because sometimes nothing really in life has prepared them how to process grief.
Right.
Like you said, there are cultures that grew up that are very good at doing that.
Yeah.
But then there's some cultures, like even the one I grew up in, where we didn't process grief. The only grief that we ever had was the Toronto Maple Leafs losing the playoffs every single year. I did see them win one back in 1967, but I don't know if they're going to win it again.
At least you have strong hope.
Yeah, we hope. We pray.
Wow. It's interesting how you mentioned that having them know what they're going through is normal is helpful.
Yeah.
And that's something I'm learning more and more, to make sure to mention, you know what, the things that you're going to go through in the next 2 days, in the next 7 days, in the next 7 months, that is normal, and it's so good if they're able to get in contact with other people who have gone or are going through those things to be able to share the normalcy of what they're going through. Because if you haven't gone through something like that before, and then all of a sudden you're experiencing a depression,
mm-hmm.
or you're angry at God, or this or that, and you're like, where is this coming from? Mm-hmm. This isn't normal, but those things are normal, and then that can really help with that grieving process.
One of the things we encourage people, and I always shake their head when I bring it up, so I often ask them, what are you doing for exercise? And they go, look at me, no, I'm not going to go lift weights in a gym. And I kind of laugh about that. I said, I'm not even talking about that. But I said, if you do, it's good for you.
Yeah, yeah.
But I said, really, in all honesty, I said, exercise really helps process the pain and anguish in your body, because your body builds up so much negative energy through this whole process of loss and death, that to go for a walk every night, or to go play ball, or to go for a swim, that as long as you're engaging some kind of physical exercise, really helps in the grieving process, which people rather surprised at.
Yeah, no, it's very true. There are some groups that do walks, gathered around that the grief, and because it just helps you work through that. And something I tell people when I'm sitting with someone is right that day, or
well, it's pretty raw.
It's really raw, and I'll have to remind them you need to eat. Because a lot of times you don't feel like eating, and so, but eating is very important, and exercise also really important to be able to help you process and just gives your body the energy that it needs to go through the work of grief, because it's not easy.
Another thing that we caution people through when they're going through the grieving process: don't make crazy decisions right now. Don't sell the house. Don't sell the car.
Yes,
don't.
That's true.
Just take your time. Give it at least a year before you make any specific decisions in your life, because how you're feeling now is not how you're going to be feeling a year from now.
And things don't have to be done right away.
Exactly.
That's another thing. Sometimes people, it's the day after and they're seeing me and they go, okay, do I start closing bank accounts? Do I do this? No. Just, it is not a rush.
Exactly.
Like almost everything can wait, pretty much. And you just take your time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's been very helpful. One thing, too, that I've noticed, Dan, is that a lot of these individuals that lose a loved one get a dog.
Yeah.
They don't get cats. Well, some do, but...
Some might.
They need help then if they
Dogs are good therapy.
Yeah. Even for my mom, who lost her second husband through a heart attack,
right,
now has a dog.
Yeah.
So my wife said, if I ever die, I'm going to be replaced by this big dog. So, okay, great.
But I'm thinking of Bull Mastiff or Rottweiler.
Yeah, Rottweiler probably more likely. But the idea is that to provide companionship.
Yes.
And I found that helps quite a lot.
Another thing that a dog might provide is redirecting some of the energy that you had been putting into taking care of your loved one.
Mm-hmm.
And you were pouring in sometimes for years into that person and helping them through what they're going through, and then all of a sudden that outlet is gone. So it's healthy to be able to redirect some of the energy that you had been pouring into there to something else, and taking care of a dog, taking care of a puppy would definitely help.
Yeah, sometimes too we work with people in terms of that when the loved one passes away, especially if they've been looking after them for a long time, there's this euphoria, sense of release. Oh, I feel so good now. And then they feel guilty.
Yeah.
Because why should I be feeling so good when my loved one who I've cared for X number of years has passed?
That's right. Yeah.
But there's a sense of release because of there is a burden involved in caring for someone who's dying and who's struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And there is this innate sense of relief that once it's happened, you feel a sense of relief. But then, again, the loneliness hits at that point, too.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Now is your opportunity to ask me as a funeral director anything.
Well, Dan, it's kind of interesting you should ask that question. I'm just intrigued as to why you got into the business.
Yeah, good question. I never thought about becoming a funeral director.
I wondered.
My dad's a pastor, and people would always ask, are you going to be a pastor like your dad?
Yeah.
And I saw the heavy burden that a pastor bears is a very heavy burden, a great responsibility. And I would always say, unless God calls me to that, I am not going to be putting out my resume to be a pastor.
Good answer.
Let's
just back it up a bit. Yeah. There. You talked about heavy weight, mm-hmm. lots of responsibility. Mm-hmm. A funeral director? Is that what are we talking about here? Because
there's some weight and responsibility to my... Yeah, exactly. I was serving tables.
Is this a trade-off or what?
Right? I was serving tables for a lot of years around Essex County and Windsor, and I love serving tables. I love working with people, so I knew that was one of my passions.
Yeah.
And I would just pray for, God, what do you want me to do? I knew I wanted to do something ministry-oriented because I feel like if I can do a ministry for my career, what better way to spend my working hours?
Exactly.
And then I was driving with my sister Vanessa, and we drove past the funeral home, and she goes, you should be a funeral director.
Really? Vanessa?
Vanessa. and I go, who would want to be a funeral director? That's so weird. Like, why would I ever want to be a funeral director? But then I couldn't shake it.
Yeah.
And so I went to this office, and I said, I'd like to see what it takes to become a funeral director. Can I volunteer here for 40 hours? To see if that's something that I'd be interested in doing. And they said, sir, you're at a cemetery. And that's how little I knew about. I said, oh, okay. They go next door. They're the funeral home. Oh, okay. So I went. The manager was kind enough to give me an opportunity to volunteer for 40 hours, which actually he later paid me for, which was kind. And I was like, wow, I really felt called to become a funeral director.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's just an opportunity to help make maybe the most difficult time in somebody's life a little bit easier.
Oh yeah.
And to be able to do that on a daily basis is just such a, I'm very thankful to be able to do that. So that's my story.
That's your story. Yeah. That's an awesome story.
Yeah. Well, once again, thank you so very much. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Okay. And, thanks, Dan.
And I hope that I can speak to some people who are watching. So God bless you too.
Yep.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining this conversation. Check out our YouTube channel and Facebook page called Conversations with Daniel, a Funeral Director. My prayer is that you would find hope and encouragement through listening.